Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattress. You know, they say on Survivor, you can tell who's working with who just by looking at who's sleeping next to each other. But if they allowed a Casper mattress out there, forget it, because everybody would just be sleeping on the Casper mattress. You wouldn't be able to tell anything. And it would be a great strategy to have one out there, but it's also a great strategy to have a Casper mattress in your home, because the Casper mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines the springy latex and merges it with supportive memory foam to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right amount of sink and just the right amount of bounce. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015, an award-winning mattress that won't disappoint, with free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for the last couple of years. Nicole and I love it. You could try it out for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll come and they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Plus, it's made in America. So go ahead and get $50 towards any mattress purchase at our link, casper.com/Rob, and use the promo code Rob. That's casper.com/Rob with the promo code Rob. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here to talk with David Bloomberg once again about the reasons why the latest two survivors lost. David, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Very good. Very excited to get into another double exit assessment. What would we call this? Why yeah, two people
good.
Lost?
That's good.
Sure.
That's right. This will be the first time that two people were voted out, though.
Yes, yes. Of course, we had the double boot where Chris and Jessica went out, what, but 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, yeah. Time flies.
Time flies. And now here we are. And the final why blank lost of the season, because 1 week from now, we'll be talking about why blank won.
That's right. That's right. You know, we'll talk about our predictions later, but it'll be interesting to see what happens, and it's always a little more difficult when they go in with so many people into the finale, because you don't want to give anyone short shrift. But, you know, we'll deal with that when it comes.
Yeah, we'll see what comes up. It's always tough to do it with a six-person finale, although we did it last year with Why Jeremy won, so I think we have that experience under our belt, David.
That's right. We can power through it. I think it's more difficult for you to get all those interviews. Although I guess you'll be on the red carpet this time, so that'll make it easier.
Yeah, I'm going to go there in person and talk to everybody. And so that's going to be fun. The only thing is it's a little harder for me to remember what questions to ask. So hopefully that there is nothing that you are desperately needing to know that I forget to ask, or at the very least, hopefully Dalton Ross or Josh or Gordon Holmes or somebody else asks the question that you need to know.
Yeah, yeah. I'll start texting you during the finale.
Perfect.
And you can just write it down on your hand.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, I need a crib sheet. All right. So, David, how's everything else going? Good?
Good, good. And you know what? We were both right about Will.
Yes. Okay, good.
Although, admittedly, that was kind of telegraphed. So that was the first half. And then I'm going to say I was close with Sunday, because I don't know if you remember, but I said last week, they all join together to vote out Will, and then the remaining foursome of David targets the threesome, and either Brett or Sunday has their torch snuffed.
So I guess is
David right or wrong?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, I think Michelle has the answer to that.
David, you're right! David, you're right!
Okay, you happy now?
I am happy, yes.
Yes. Do you want that as a ringtone or for text message alert?
Yes, actually, I do. Can you send that to me when we're done with the podcast here? I wanted to bring it in to one of my employees earlier this week.
Sure, so, sure.
You know, yeah. You can always use it around the house, too. So
yes, it'll be the end of your employment and your marriage, but I can be happy to send it over to you, David. Okay. All right. So that's last week. We have two things to get through today with Will and Sunday. So well, let's go through the overview. And then for each rule, we'll talk about Will and Sunday.
I'm going to lead off by something that I haven't heard in any other podcasts. And I mean, maybe someone has brought it up elsewhere, like on a blog I haven't read or another podcast. But I'm going to stake my claim right here. I have a hot take for you.
Breaking news are happening now.
All right, David Bloomberg with an original hot take about Survivor Millennials versus Gen X. Go for it.
This is a pagonging.
Pagonging? What?
Yes. It's a well-hidden pagonging. It's certainly the most interesting and entertaining pagonging ever, but it is a pagonging nevertheless.
Is David right or wrong?
Ever since Jessica was rocked out, a member of Zeke's alliance has been voted out. Zeke, Will, Sunday. So you've got, despite all these schemes and machinations, and despite all the swirling trust clusters, the core group of David, Ken, Adam, and Hannah have held firm. We see them talking about wanting to target David, but nobody ever does anything about it.
So then by your logic, then the next boot will be what, Jay or Brett?
That's what I'm going to say when we get to our predictions, but it'll be more complicated, I'm sure, but that's what I'm seeing here.
It is interesting because a keen observation by you. I mean, technically, Will did switch sides. And so hard to say it's a pagonging when almost like if you go back to Survivor Samoa, where Russell's group, even though they were in lower numbers than the people from Galoo. Do we consider that a pagonging? I don't know what it's called when you are able to do that from a minority position of numbers, because technically they did have less numbers. Will flipped to them, and then they went back and voted out Will after that.
Right, right. I would make the argument that Will was sort of in the middle, which we'll get into in a little bit here. You know, if you look at the David versus Zeke sides, David's side hasn't taken a hit yet. Since the Jessica rock.
Since the Jessica thing. So that's interesting to note.
So, you know, obviously this is more of an observation than an explanation for Will and Sunday. You know, we're not going to end the podcast here. We still need to delve into these particular votes to see how they happened and what led to this point. So, you know, we can move on, get to it, and figure out the full reasons why Will and Sunday lost.
Okay, scheming and plotting. Certainly from the Will side of things, we saw that he was ready to scheme and plot because he had to work on his resume. But I think that the Sunday part of this is probably the more interesting part of the conversation as to whether you felt like that there was sufficient scheming and plotting.
Well, I find it all interesting. But I mean, to me, it seems like just about everybody left on this season and everybody who left recently on this season knows they have to scheme and plot, with maybe Ken being the exception. We have Will, we have Sunday, we have two different situations. If we look all the way back in time, Will had a web confessional during the episode when the millennials went to tribal council that first time. And back then, he found himself between alliances with a choice to make. On the one hand, he didn't like everyone on the Triforce Alliance. Remember them?
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, from a strategic standpoint, he believed that sticking with them would be better. So he weighed these two options and explained to us that he knew he had to look at his long-term game. Thinking short-term would have meant voting out Figgy at the time, which he wanted to do because he saw that she had no social awareness and could be a liability. On the other hand, he said that Mari didn't talk strategy to anyone, so he didn't know if he could work with her in the game long-term. Obviously, as we know, he made the right move, chose to vote strategically, keeping Figgy around for a little while, because he felt that he could at least work with her. So Will was thinking along the right lines, but he still had some problems getting in tight with other millennials at the start. In his interview with Josh, he said that he struggled to get into one alliance or another. He was kind of in between the whole time, which, you know, that's not necessarily a bad place to be, but he wasn't considered an equal ally with anyone. He was always the fifth person in a five-person alliance. And we saw that continue into the swap, where he just kept feeling like people were using him as a number rather than a true ally. I think a lot of this came from the other players knowing he was only 18 and still in high school, because even for the other millennials, it was probably difficult to see him as an equal. My own sons are 20 and 17, and while there are times that other adults treat them more or less as equals, there are definitely other times when they or we don't. I mean, both of them were still sitting at the kids' table at Thanksgiving a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and here's the thing. older adults, they feel like they want to guide someone who is that age in life, even though all of them had exactly the same amount of experience playing Survivor, I guess, like Survivor New York, notwithstanding.
Brooklyn, David.
Brooklyn, I'm sorry. Is there a difference?
Well, I mean, in both the game and the borough. Yeah, sure.
Midwestern guy here, you can tell. Yeah, Will had an uphill battle to get that point across to them, even as he wanted to get into alliances. Now, eventually, as we know, he felt the need to stand up and shout, "This is my game," and in a much deeper voice than me. He did that by flipping on Zeke in a very public manner. We'll obviously discuss that more in the second rule. But one thing to point out here is that, as Stephen noted on Know-It-Alls, we may argue with some of Will's actions, but he definitely had a good understanding of his position within the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And that position, you know, as I mentioned earlier, was more of an in-between position than it was as a solid ally for anyone.
Just to go back to the Will thing, I think that one of the interesting observations that I had from a podcast that we did before the season started, where I talked to Jamie Goodfriend, who is a sort of a generational analyst in terms of marketing. And she did say that one of the things about dealing with the millennial tribe was going to be that they wanted to be seen as equals. You know, they weren't going to be interested. If you wanted to work with them, you needed to sort of really like enroll them in that they were going to be sort of an equal partner with the older people in the game. And I think that probably a lot of people didn't always look at Will in that same way. And I think he resented certain people for it.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it is interesting because he on TV, he didn't really come across as being only 18 to me. Now, maybe that's because, like I said, I have two kids. You know, they bracket him in age. And so I deal with a lot of these kids from time to time, what I'll call kids. And he seemed, between his deep voice and just the way he held himself, he did seem older and more mature than some of the other kids that I have, you know, seen and met. And hopefully none of my son's friends are listening to this and think it applies to them. But I still think, you know, you're out there 24/7 and they already know his age. So definitely they looked at him differently than someone who had already, you know, grown up a bit more.
What about in terms of the scheming and plotting for Sunday, though?
Well, we didn't really see her doing a whole lot of scheming and plotting. And you know, she knows it. And she discussed that in her interviews, noting that just because they didn't show it on TV doesn't mean it wasn't happening. Sunday said she had a hand in many of the votes. You know, going back to the beginning, her original plan was to align with alpha males and use them as shields into the merge. Well, Brett and Chris fit the bill perfectly for her. And she worked with them throughout the game, making decisions alongside of them. She also worked with other people, like we saw her working with Jay, sometimes with Adam and Hannah at other points. And she was also providing information to various people as well. In your interview with her, she said that later in the game, she was allies with Brett and Jay, but also somewhat playing both sides with Adam. The problem was that Adam was, well, just plain playing her, as he has been with so many other people. And she noted that she felt the most betrayed by him. The other problem was that throughout the game, she was working with people, but she didn't usually seem to be pushing the action. She said in another interview that at home, she's a leader in a number of ways, but she was determined not to make herself a target by being in any kind of leadership role. But she admits that she unfortunately overcorrected and didn't take enough initiative or control of certain things like the strategic game. Her biggest move, of course, she was definitely in control, and that was getting David to waste his idol by tricking them into thinking Ken was the target. Sunday said in a web confessional back from episode 8 that you have to pay attention to what people are saying and also to what she herself is projecting to the other players. And this is, you know, wise strategic thinking on her part. She was also doing her best to keep an eye on things, even leading up to the vote that ended with Zeke leaving, when she said that she checked in with Will multiple times to make sure he was on their side, for example. The problem, of course, is that Will, like I mentioned with Adam, was lying to her. And Hannah also lied to her throughout the game, and especially in what was her final vote. I do think this may be one place where she was at a disadvantage. Some people we've seen are like human lie detectors. Others are paranoid enough that they just assume everyone is lying. Sunday seemed to be more trusting, more willing and able to believe people. And I think some of the other players definitely took advantage of that. So from that aspect of scheming and plotting, she just wasn't able to keep up with the lies.
In terms of scheming and plotting too much, I feel like we probably have to give Sunday a pass, and Will is going to be the focus of rule number two.
Well, you are right that Will's going to be the focus, but we can't quite give Sunday a pass. However, we will move through the topics with her fairly quickly. In general, like you said, you know, she was mostly okay, but there were two situations that did cause issues for her in this role. The first relates to her relationship with Jessica, which we'll go into in more detail later, but this is the same question that we had about Chris, which was whether she backstabbed Jessica too soon.
Mm-hmm.
When we discussed this with Chris, we came to the conclusion that it wasn't necessarily too soon given the dynamics at the time, because Chris, Sunday, and Brett just didn't feel they could trust Jessica to the point that they actually trusted some of the millennials more. And, you know, they believed that they were at the time in an alliance that held the majority. So I guess we'll come to the same conclusion with Sunday as we did with Chris, that it wasn't necessarily too soon in that particular instance. But Sunday had another issue here, and that is that Sunday was not playing on her own. She and Brett were a solid pair who would almost certainly always vote as a unit. As listeners should certainly know by now, this rule warns against having an open duo, because having two people together like that makes them especially dangerous. And that becomes even more true as the numbers get lower and lower. Sunday herself said in one interview that she probably would have stuck with Brett as they got closer to the end, you know, taking him to the final three. So it would be those two and one other person in a game where people were talking about one person switching sides, potentially, you know, being a kingmaker. Having two people able to switch sides, that could really throw a wrench into the works.
For Will?
So Will, as I said, is going to, you know, have a little bit longer discussion. And it's a little bit more complicated, even though it seems maybe like it might be straightforward. You know, did Will scheme and plot too much and backstab Zeke too soon? Well, Will himself said in interviews that he did, just as Zeke said he himself moved too soon against David after being voted out last week. In all of Will's interviews, including the one he did with you, Will essentially said that he swung the pendulum too soon. He should have waited to backstab Zeke. And he also said he should have trusted Jay Moore, meaning that by not doing so, he was...
Not the actor Jay Moore.
No, not the actor Jay Moore. That will have to wait until Celebrity Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was, Will didn't want to make the move against Zeke with Jay because he was afraid Jay would get all the credit. And I think one thing he didn't foresee is that by doing it himself, he ended up getting all the blame. He also told Josh in their interview that besides waiting a week, another thing maybe he shouldn't have done was tell Ken. And I would say, apparently, that's the case.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, he didn't know there was going to be a pop quiz coming on it.
Right, right. Looking back in time a bit, we already discussed how Will felt he was not being given equal status among his allies. And he was worried there was almost nothing he could do to make the jury give him $1 million because he's 18. So he felt he had to try even harder to make his mark on the game. Earlier, I complimented Will on knowing his place in the tribe. I'm not sure if he had the same read on the jury. He said in his interview with Josh that he would look at the jury and see Michelle, Chris, and especially Taylor looking at him like he was a little kid. And that made him freak out and drove him to make that big move. I just have to wonder how he was getting that kind of specific read from them, just from the looks on their faces, especially from someone like Taylor. I do agree that Will had an uphill climb, but I wonder how much he was imprinting his own worries into the jury's minds as he was trying to read their faces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, we obviously know what happened at that point. Even Ken said in a web confessional that Will made a move that was too big at the wrong time. But was there more to it than that? I would say yes. While the situations were not identical, I think that they are similar enough to a certain Christy from your season and Dolly from Vanuatu. Now, not that I need to tell you, but to remind listeners, both of them were in situations where they were between two alliances and refused to make a promise to either. In both cases, the other members of the tribe realized that they were vulnerable to this indecision and joined together to vote out the swing vote. This was a little different because Will was able to swing once before getting cut down. And he did make promises. You know, as I said earlier, he repeatedly reassured Sunday that he was voting with Zeke's group, not against them. But as Penner noted on the recap podcast, while Will did vote with David's alliance, he didn't do so as part of that alliance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the process, he caused that alliance to waste an idol. So after Will fooled them all once, they weren't going to let him enact his full pendulum strategy and swing in both directions to fool them twice.
Yeah.
In his CBS interview, Will flat out said that he was voted out because he could not be trusted. He was lying and trying to make too many big moves. And he added that after he voted out Zeke, people realized they could not trust him. And it was evident that he was willing to play hard to win. And he even called his own gameplay erratic as evidence of that. It appears in looking back that there might have already been something of an impression of Will not being fully trustworthy, because all the way back in one of Figgy's post-game interviews, she said that she considered Will to be a rat who was running around all over the place. Now, it's not clear why, but that thought was out there. And I also remember seeing at least one other post-game interview with a player suggesting something similar, though I now can't remember exactly who it was. So I feel like a few people had impressions already that he might not be the most trustworthy, probably because he wasn't solid in any one alliance, as he had said. And as part of all his swinging, he caused that to, you know, come to the forefront even more. And also that swinging obviously meant he was not keeping his scheming secret. I know that we've heard that there was a lot of discussion out there this season about everyone's strategy, that people were just talking about it openly. But I still don't think that means each player should get fully involved in it. And when Will got to the point of flat out saying in tribal council, you know, my original plan was to flip on Zeke, well, I really don't think anyone should be fully revealing everything in that way.
David, so rule number three is to be flexible. I'm interested to get your take on the both of them, because I think that there were probably some issues with both of them in terms of their flexibility.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear from what we've already discussed regarding Will that he knew he had to avoid locking himself into just one alliance. You know, we saw that part of the problem was Will becoming a little too flexible at the end and nobody knowing which way that pendulum might bend. But as for Sunday, she said in a web confessional this week that she knew she needed to be flexible. Okay, she was obviously right. I'm not sure if she knew this already or if she learned it from her kids, who, you know, they'll try anything 80 different ways.
And I feel like my kids that are millennials, they'll give anything a try. They'll try it with anybody and they'll try it 80 different ways.
I mean, that's the definition of being flexible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. So whether she, you know, learned it from her kids or knew it herself, she noted that she came in and wanted to be adaptable and flexible, not be stuck with one person, to be able to switch when she needed to switch and stay when she needed to stay. To extend this idea, Sunday said in interviews that if she had made it to the end, one of the things that she would have talked about was switching her alliances when she needed to and not getting stuck in one place such that she would only vote with certain people. And that idea follows this rule very nicely. But I don't know if I was a juror that I would have fully bought it. I mean, okay, she switched to vote out Paul, but then she felt bad about it and went back to her solid allies, Chris and Brett.
Mm-hmm.
She joined David's group to vote out Will. But other than that, I don't remember much jumping around like she talked about. Do you?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, they were sort of really just dug in. I mean, from the Gen X side of things, like had they been able to stick together and do a proper pagonging of the millennials, that, you know, you figure that they all probably end up being better served by that, at least, you know, in the short term for a couple of rounds.
Right, right. So obviously, you know, Sunday in her interviews had a different impression than what we saw. For one reason or another, she felt like she was being flexible and moving around. We, however, didn't really see that. And, you know, I think it relates also to another part of this rule where I feel like she was a bit iffy, is this rule says you should have your finger on the pulse of each tribe member so you can always be in the majority. And we know that wasn't the case because I mentioned earlier, people just kept lying to her and she believed them. So, no, unfortunately, she was not as flexible and did not have her finger on the pulse as much as she could have.
Okay, David. Rule number four is don't let your emotions control you. I mean, I do recall some times when Will's emotions got a little out of hand.
Well, a little bit. And, you know, Sunday as well, we'll deal with that, too. But I think Will knew what to do. And, you know, back in the first rule, I talked about that first millennial vote where Will was trying to decide whether to go against Mari or Figgy. And he said at the time he had to decide between a person he liked but couldn't work with or a person he hated but could work with. And he chose game over emotions. So he made the correct decision there. The need to vote against his emotions actually happened several times throughout the game. He noted that everyone was very comforting to each other, no matter what side they were on, which was indeed something I think we'd seen from time to time this season also. And in fact, it somewhat confused predictions, at least on my part, a few times, because, for example, he and Hannah were often on opposite sides of the vote, but they also had a what he described as a brother-sister type relationship. You know, we would see these secret scenes or these what maybe seemed to be unimportant scenes on the show of people all being friendly and talking to each other, but then they, you know, go against each other in the votes. And that was, you know, confusing and made it hard to predict what was going to happen. But, you know, it was because he was not playing with his emotions. And, you know, another similar case, he admired Zeke. He had been very close to Zeke, but he still believed he had to cut Zeke at that time. Now, we already went over the reasons it wasn't strategically the greatest idea to do it right then or in that way. But at least he was thinking about it in a strategic way, not emotionally. And I have to give him credit for that.
What about Sunday's emotions?
Well, she also faced some similar situations. In an episode 12 web confessional after the family visit, she said she was reminded that she's here for her family, not someone she just met. And therefore, she knew she shouldn't just vote with her emotions out of loyalty, for example, to keep someone who would beat her in the game. And apparently her kids gave her that same exact advice before leaving. But there was at least one emotional moment out there, and it turned into a big theme. We finally got some answers about what happened between Sunday and Jessica. As I had suspected all along, it mostly had to do with emotions. Sunday told you that after the Paul vote, she went back to Brett and Chris, but she didn't get things worked out with Jessica. You know, then word came down to vote against Jessica just before that next tribal council. And so obviously that didn't help things. And then the swap happened. So she just didn't have time to mend fences. And that fence, you know, became a wall. In her Ponderosa video, she added that she felt guilty. And because of her own feelings of guilt, she thought Jessica must be mad at her and therefore must be targeting her. So in response, she had to target Jessica first. This sounds very similar to my suggestions previously that she was somewhat redirecting her own guilt towards Jessica. So it was an emotional situation that kind of got out of hand. And those feelings caused a rift that could not be healed in the game. You know, we had many other players making and breaking alliances, but Sunday and Jessica would never be able to trust each other at all. That split helped divide the Gen Xers and cause the Gen X Civil War, which helped cause the downfall of Chris. and helped cause the rock draw leading to Jessica's elimination. Now, I'm not saying one decision determined the entire path of the game, but I am saying that the split helped direct the path that other players followed, and it certainly made some options impossible for both Sunday and Jessica. I'm glad that they worked it out at Ponderosa, but it had a pretty big impact in the game.
If only they could have had that conversation on the beach, David.
That's right. If they'd hugged it out on the beach, it would have been a completely different game.
If only you were there.
That's right. That's right. I would bring people together. I'm a healer.
You are a healer. That's right. Then rule number five, pretend to be nice, play the social game. Keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. I don't think that we had an issue really with either of these people, at least not pretending to be nice, and seemingly both of them were nice in the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for Will in particular, we don't have a whole lot to go on either way. He seemed to be well-liked enough. I mean, everybody pretty much did. He made friends with various people, including Zeke, Jay, Hannah. He probably wasn't a social game superstar. People weren't saying, oh, we love Will, we got to bring him to the end. But nothing he did contributed to people saying, oh, that Will, he's a jerk, we got to vote him out. So, you know, he was fine. He was good. Sunday, on the other hand, was actually using the social game as her primary weapon. Zeke said in his post-game interview with Josh that Sunday had a tremendous social game that was very subtle and quiet, and that she was friends with everybody. He emphasized that the reason Hannah and Adam bit on Ken's name at the Rock Drawing Tribal Council was that both thought they were in tight with Sunday. She had a very trusting relationship with a lot of people. Now, you know, we saw that already that trust may have come back to bite her on several occasions. But Zeke continued that she was playing very intentionally into the mom archetype. It was her goal to be someone who people thought they could beat at the end. And I would echo, you know, a lot of those same thoughts that Zeke said, that she did a good job, her relationship with Jessica perhaps notwithstanding. She said in one interview that if she had made it to the final three, she would have talked about how she made personal relationships with each of the other players. She also said she felt like she was well-liked, which I would agree with. And she knows she's not a Zeke or a David who drove the action strategically, but she played to her strengths and relied more on that social game.
All right, David, rule number six, don't be too much of a threat. Now, both of these end up approaching this from different sides. Obviously, Will became a threat when he started to work on his resume. Hannah obviously saw Sunday as a threat in blocking her seat at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah. The last one's a little weird, and we'll get to that. The first one, we've seen big threat after big threat after big threat leave the game this season. And I would say before the last couple episodes, we wouldn't have really considered Will and Sunday to be big threats. Even with Will moving into the position he did, I'd still say it was not as big an issue as it was in the other recent votes. You know, like you said, he was not trusted by players on either side of the divide. And because they couldn't rely on him, yeah, he was a threat. And I think Will would also say the same thing, that his move, you know, made him into a threat. The weird thing that I saw was Sunday said in a web confessional at the time that a lot of people didn't want to be up against Will at the end of the game. So maybe other people were buying into this resume thing. And, you know, Will himself told you that he put a target on his back by flushing Adam's idol, which, you know, gave him that dot point on the resume. I didn't think that it was enough to blow people away to say, oh my gosh, he's that big of a threat that we got to get rid of him before the end. But at least some people were talking about it that way. So that is interesting to know. Sunday herself, well, she didn't think she was a threat. And, you know, going into her vote, she said in a web confessional, it didn't make any sense to send her out with two big threats left in the game. So she thought she'd be okay. I would say many viewers and podcasters and bloggers have echoed that very same sentiment since she was voted out. So was she a threat? Yeah, sort of. Sunday said in Ponderosa someone had mentioned they worried about her cancer survivor story if she made the final three. I say that's a possibility. You know, we've heard things about players being worried about going up against a fireman or someone who really needs the money or, you know, someone else with a really good story like that. Personally, I don't see that in this particular group. Instead, the question goes back to what you brought up. Is she a threat to take the GOAT spot? So is she a threat by not being a threat? Now, you know, we have to kind of wrap our brains around that one. Because, so Hannah said Sunday had made herself into too much of a tempting goat. Hannah was scared that someone who worked less hard would get a spot she's been fighting for. When we watched it, you know, this came off as Hannah saying she wanted to get the GOAT spot. And you even mentioned on the voicemail podcast that Figgy had tweeted about them fighting for that GOAT position. It certainly seemed like Hannah was basically saying Sunday was going to take my GOAT spot in the finals away from me, which is, you know, not something we see terribly often. But this conflicts with other things we've seen indicating that Hannah actually wants credit for the moves she's made. So was Hannah trying to represent the GOAT and then come alive in the final tribal council to talk about all the huge moves she's made and how she secretly controlled the game? Because, you know, certainly that would never work on any Survivor season anywhere in the world, right?
Certainly not in North America.
Okay. Okay. But you know, we were wondering, okay, how does Hannah get to that spot? How did she flip the votes against Sunday? And how did, you know, that end up happening in that tribal council? Well, Sunday said in one interview that it's her understanding that Hannah started pushing to vote her out just minutes before they left for tribal council, and the others didn't want to make a big stink, so they went along with it. She believes Hannah wanted credit for a big move, which would be odd because then Hannah probably wouldn't have been paying close attention to what happened when Will wanted credit for a big move, but okay. But even Sunday said that a big move would be taking out a power player or a big threat, and she doesn't think that Hannah achieved it by getting them to vote off Sunday. So, like I said, the two ideas conflict. You can't be a GOAT if you're making obvious big moves, and if you are a GOAT, then you aren't making big moves. So, I don't know. In the end, I'm going to have to say I don't think Sunday was voted out because she was a GOAT threat, despite some of the things we saw. I think there were other more significant issues at play. I think it might even go back to, you know, what I had said about this being a pagonging, but there's just not much to show on TV for that. So, you know, we get what we get, and we've kind of got to read between the lines.
Okay, David. So read between the lines of vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong.
All right. So we've been stuck on the strong for a long time. And although I like both Will and Sunday, I have to say we finally moved to the weak category.
Okay.
You and others might be saying that David is strong and he should have been targeted. We should have stayed with the strong, keep going after, you know, the big threats, the David. But you have to remember that this part of the rule talks about targeting the strong players outside your alliance when it talks about the strong. After that's done, you switch. And as I mentioned earlier, it's become clearer and clearer to me that we're seeing a pagonging. So you are switching to outside your alliance. That means it's time to cull the herd a bit and get rid of some of the players who couldn't protect themselves. Both Will and Sunday fell into this category. They're outside the core alliance, and they were weaker members who were not being protected at the time. And so it switched back to getting rid of the weak.
David, you have these appendices. Do whatever it takes to get the idols. So in the case of Sunday, no real idol business going on. Will did have knowledge of Jay's idol, and he did touch on that in my exit interview with him, why that was so important to get rid of Michaela.
Right, right. And, you know, he was at least out there hunting idols and was there when Jay found that idol. Apparently, at one point, Will said in an interview, I don't remember if it was yours or not, that he was holding the log or whatever had the idol in it, and they just didn't realize it had the idol. And so he was kind of kicking himself for that one. And then he did get to blow up Jay's idol to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, Sunday, we didn't see anything dealing with Sunday and idols. Other than I can't remember. I feel like she was out on the Gen X idol hunt after David used his first one and then refound it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly nothing in particular springs to mind.
And then the final appendix is the final tribal council. Now, obviously, both of these players were thinking a lot about the final tribal council.
They were. You know, Will was looking ahead to the jury and preparing his resume like we've heard, you know, 100 times. He wanted that $1 million job interview. And he also had ideas about who he wanted to take to the end. He had said he wanted either Brett and Sunday or Adam and Hannah. And as a matter of fact, those four were in his ideal final five, so he could then decide which direction he would want to take. So, yeah, he had lots of plans. Unfortunately, he had to get to there and couldn't. I would also say Sunday was looking ahead and trying to figure out the best way to succeed as well, although obviously it was a different path than Will. One difference is, of course, she was going to go with Brett. And then the question was, okay, who was she going to try to take with in that final three? I think she had made mention of Adam or Hannah as well. And she also knew what she was going to say if she made it to the end. You know, I had mentioned that she was going to talk about her social game. And so she was brushing up her resume as well. It just had two different skill sets there.
Any final thoughts on Will and Sunday before we look ahead to the finale?
You know, as I mentioned, over the course of the past couple weeks, I was beginning to think the rest of the season would just be me saying each person was voted out because they were a threat. But even in a super strong group of players, there are a few who are not quite considered to be the same type of threat, though sometimes those are the ones who go on to win the game because they use the others as shields. Neither of those possibilities happened here. Both Will and Sunday had some threatening aspects, but that wasn't the main cause for the votes against them. Will, by his own later admission, made too big a move at the wrong time. He wanted to show that he could really play this game, but at the same time, he also showed that he couldn't necessarily be fully trusted by either side. Will himself said in an interview that it was interesting to watch the progression on TV of him thinking he was the king to getting blindsided. He learned that arrogance will take you down hard. Sunday didn't have that problem, but she did set into motion a series of events leading to this point due to her feud with Jessica. It's obviously impossible to know how things would have turned out if they had been able to work together, but we know that the path they actually went down didn't end up well for either of them. More importantly, at this point, Sunday was part of an open duo with Brett, which can be a little scary as the numbers get whittled down. For both players, they did many things right, but also a few things that got them in trouble. In both cases, though, flipping on an old ally started them down the path to getting voted out at this point. And that is why Will and Sunday lost.
All right, David. So finale night coming up on Wednesday. What do you want to talk about? You want to predict the final three? You want to predict a winner? I'm sure you have it all mapped out.
I have it mapped out and it's a crazy map.
Okay.
Let's work backwards a bit.
Is it more of a map or a maze?
Probably a maze.
Oh boy.
I'll be amazed if I get it right.
Yeah. Okay.
So working backwards.
What happens when we get to the center?
We get to the center, a minotaur comes out and eats us.
Okay.
Isn't that the way it works?
I've seen it go a couple different ways.
Oh, okay. Okay. One thing that is very interesting to me, and I'm very happy about, is it looks like this may be one of the least bitter juries ever, because it seems like none of them hold a grudge. As just one example, Zeke and Will were hanging out in a hammock in Ponderosa, even though Will was the one who had sent Zeke packing just a few days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Will said in one interview that they are all very much fans and players of the game who respect the game so much that they're not going to take it personally. So that's the thought I'm keeping in mind when I'm making my predictions here.
Yeah. And just to echo that, this is a really great cast. We were very lucky this season. It's not always the case with these Survivor seasons, these Big Brother seasons, and especially these BBOTT seasons. So we should definitely be sure to count our blessings with this Survivor cast.
That's right. That's right. Hey, are you calling me a bitter juror for BBOTT?
I wasn't even possibly thinking that, David.
Okay. Okay. Well, I was on Twitter. So, okay. I think the easiest way to do this is talk about who can't win, because that's the simpler, you know, group to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how Hannah can win against anybody but maybe Brett. And the problem is she will presumably be against two people, which tells me Hannah cannot win.
Okay.
You know, Sunday specifically singled her out in interviews to talk about how she didn't like how Hannah was playing. There was a brief discussion on Twitter involving Steven and a couple other people about whether Hannah could say, well, David's only here because I let him be here. And, you know, could that be a good argument? Personally, I would say no, not really, because I just don't think the jury would really give her that much credit. So what do you think? Can Hannah win?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, again, I have watched, you know, 55 days of a Survivor season and said a person couldn't win. So anything is possible. But based on the knowledge that I have, I would not think it was likely.
Okay. So.
So, yes. Okay. In the words of Taylor Stocker.
Unlikely.
Yes. But still, you know, so you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a meteor could come down and hit everyone else, you know.
As Penner put it, an atom bomb could go off.
So, okay, next one up. I also don't see how Ken can win. And I would go so far as to say if Ken does somehow win, it will somewhat invalidate all of the huge strategic gameplay throughout the season.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I you know, I mean, in a room full of strategic sharks, you know, Ken is Mr. Squiddington.
Squid Squiddington to you.
Squid Squiddington.
No, Sir Squiddington. Sir Squiddington.
Sir Squiddington. Sir. Okay, sorry.
But David, but isn't there, I know you've studied David Nash and game theory in a season where everybody is a strategist who is really trying hard to figure out every angle. I mean, doesn't the person who is the opposite of that have a bit of an advantage?
Not when the jury is made up of those same players who have given all indications that they will vote for someone who shared those values.
Okay.
So, you know,
for the and same apologies to John Nash. I don't know who David Nash is.
You know, okay.
Is he in Crosby, Stills, and Nash? I don't know. Sorry about
might
that.
Might be. It might be. So I thought you were going to, you know, sing about Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. I have a similar feeling about Brett, not quite the same as Ken. And he's certainly been more fun than Ken and, you know, somewhat more strategic. He still hasn't been pushing the action. So I don't see him winning either. I don't know if you share that opinion.
The Penner quote actually comes from him talking about the chances that Brett could win the game. So,
okay.
Yeah, he says it seems even more unlikely than Hannah.
Okay. So that leaves us with three possibilities: Adam, David, and Jay. The only way I can see Adam winning is by removing both David and Jay. And I just don't think he can do that. I think he's run out of time. I think he loses to either of them. And so if he can't get rid of both of them, I don't see how he wins.
It's interesting because I could see a way how he could beat David. I think that would be a pretty interesting vote, Adam and David, because David certainly has the better resume or the reputation in the game, but I feel like that Adam has more friends on the jury.
Yeah, but he has more friends he screwed over on the jury too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I do say, you know, I am talking about them not being bitter, but there's being bitter and then there's being repeatedly screwed over. If Jay ends up on that jury, yeah, he may vote for Adam, but on the other hand, how many times did Adam make him a promise and then not go through with it?
Right. But how could he not vote for Adam after that scene that we had with the two of them on the hammock?
Well, that's true. And there was also a web confessional of Jay saying, one, he wants to take Adam along with him. And also he would give him his vote in all likelihood because he knows that Adam is playing for his family and he's just not going to do something goofy like some of these other players in the game. So you may be right about Jay in particular, but there
and
are other
you have a couple of those back row jury people like Taylor and like Michelle. What do they ultimately end up doing in an Adam versus David and then throw in some random person like a Hannah? You know, how do they ultimately end up swaying?
They vote for the Green Party.
Right, Right. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think that it's because they really have no strong ties to David. I know Michelle was on the tribe with him post swap, but it didn't seem like that held any water. So I really think that there are a lot of toss ups in this thing.
Well, I do agree. I think that, you know, David can make the case and should make the case that he has played strategically the whole way. And even as the biggest threat, he has stuck around, you know, and then Adam has his own, you know, points to make as well. I just think in the end, David beats Adam.
Also, I think that Adam has the emotional pull with a lot of these players. I'm sure that the story about his mom is going to come up in a final tribal council. If he does get there against David, I just think that he has a lot of outs against David. I think that the problem for Adam is that I still feel like he's number four in the alliance that we're talking about of Adam, David, Hannah, and Ken.
Yeah, I think you're right there too. So it will be more difficult for him to get there. If he does get there, it'll be close. It'll be one of the closest battles, but, I still think he loses, but I also think you're probably right and that we never find out because he gets knocked out of there before then.
So then if we're taking Adam off of the table, and it sounds like that you are, it seems like that you are really stuck between David and Jay.
Right. And I think either of them wins if they're up against anyone else except the other one.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. And I feel like David wins in a head-to-head battle. The question is if they can make it to that point. So at the beginning of the podcast, I planted my flag. I said, this is a pagonging. If I'm right and the trend continues, Jay or Brett will be the next one voted out, likely depending on who wins immunity. There has been so much talk of Adam or Hannah flipping and so many opportunities for them to do so, but it just hasn't happened. So I still don't think it'll happen now. If Jay does not win the next immunity challenge, it seems like almost a certainty that he will be voted out. But then again, we've said David seemed like a certain target for several votes now. Everyone, without fail, has been talking about how big a threat David is. This means one of two things to me. David wins, or David is immediately targeted, just the same way I said Jay might be immediately targeted. As I said, I don't see a way David makes it to the final three and loses, even to Jay. So, is everyone saying that David is a huge threat a signal that he's going to win, or a distraction because he's finally going to get the boot? That's where I lose it. I don't know. I start thinking at multiple levels.
See, I see things a little differently. I think that David is probably the winner, but I think that he definitely can lose to Jay, and I think he can also lose to Adam.
Okay. Well, before we get to that point, I think the only chance to break up the inevitable steamroll to the end for David's side would be Jay winning enough immunities to either like beast his way to the final three, or at least giving him time to get into Adam's head and finally convince him to actually go through with the flip. Mm-hmm. If he does that and gets rid of David, then Jay wins. And there have been signals that Jay and Adam will actually work together to get to the end, especially in the most recent episode. Jay told Adam, it's me and you till the end. Even though we know Adam said he does not want to go to the end with Jay, I just feel like we're being told it's going to end up that way. And then Jay reemphasized it in a web confessional for this episode, you know, after Adam shared the information about his mother, like I said earlier, that he wants to go to the end with Adam if possible. So I've kind of taken you through all my thinking, which I realize may be a bit discombobulated, or as you said earlier, a maze. I think that's because I have, you know, two sides warring in my head here. I feel like most of the season has been about David. He's been driving both the strategic and storytelling action, not to, you know, get into the wiggle room about the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But so much recently has been suggesting a Jay and Adam pairing that I just can't ignore it. And Jay does have a good story to tell, in that he was effectively dead in the water at one point, but managed to make it to the end practically by sheer force of will, in not the player will, in knowing not to use his idol in several earlier votes, winning immunities, keeping his head down, things like that. And then if he gets to the end by getting rid of David, you know, that's just a perfect capstone on his story. So it's almost, for me, flip a coin. But there's one overriding fact that keeps pushing me back towards David.
He has the same name as you. We know.
That's it. That's it. That's it.
Is that really it?
No, okay. That is not really it. Okay. It is the Pagongi. And the fact that David's allies have repeatedly gravitated back towards saving him, even when we as viewers think it's crazy. Rob, we saw this before. We saw this in Second Chances. It happened that way for Jeremy. I think it may happen that way again for David. And so that's my final prediction. David will win.
David will win. I mean, I am leaning towards that as well, David being the winner. But I do think that there are some big potholes that he has to worry about. I think that he will win in the end if he's sitting there with Brett, Hannah, or Ken. Any combination of those people, I think that David is the winner of the season. I think he has a lot of problems with Jay. I think that Jay is the biggest jury threat on the board because, I mean, take a look at some of the people that are sitting there on the jury. Taylor is a vote for Jay. Michelle is a vote for Jay. Will's probably a vote for Jay. I think Brett and Sunday are most likely to vote for Jay. That's five votes for Jay if he gets there. I think he beats almost anybody. I think he does beat anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right. You
especially
may well be right.
Because if he gets there, it will be because of some combination of either amazing strategy or an immunity run. And we know that going back to Worlds Apart, that Mike Holloway had a lot of problems in his game, but he won all those immunities. I mean, you get to a point where the jury just has to say, okay, you beat us so badly, we just have to give it to you.
Yeah, you may be convincing me that in a David J finale that Jay wins.
Jay wins if he gets to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and that's another reason they just have to, you know, David's group just has to pagong him or else, you know, they're in trouble. I don't think David and Jay both make it to the end.
No, I don't think so. I think that Jay has to go out. They have to get rid of Jay. If he at any point doesn't have immunity, you have to take him out for this reason.
Right. And on the flip side, if Jay, flips someone, they're going to go after David.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't think we will see a Jay and David finale. I think it will be one of them against other people that they can more easily beat.
And then Adam's a wild card for me. If Adam gets there, I think that he has a chance to beat David.
He has a chance, but I don't think it's a very good chance.
And I think he could inherit some of that Jay support. Like, I think just like going back to the primaries, it's like, okay, now this candidate is gone. Now, who are they advocating for on the jury? And I feel like that, I mean, Jay just has no connection to the side with the David and Ken and Han. You know, he just is such a wild card in terms of, and he has a lot of sway with that jury in terms of the Taylors and the Michelles and even Brett and Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to read. I just don't know if certain players will think what Adam did is good strategic gameplay. And that's where it's hard to draw the line. You know, Sunday, despite the fact that she never voted with David, really, has said she had a good relationship with David. And as I said, in interviews has been calling him the biggest threat. Well, if you're calling him the biggest threat, do you then turn around and vote for someone else at the end? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do think that David gets pretty much all the Gen X votes.
Yes.
And then probably he gets Zeke. And what that means is, you know, we're getting to a very close race here.
It'll be a really fun finale. It should be really exciting. And we got a lot of tribal councils, a lot of different ways this could turn out. What more could we ask for in a Survivor finale, David?
Right. I mean, you've got, you know, David making a fake idol and you've got Ken with his legacy advantage and all sorts of craziness. It'll definitely be a lot of fun, if nothing else.
All right. So, David, great stuff. Do you have a hashtag worked out?
The only one I could think of, which is kind of ironic because I said this wasn't what happened, is hashtag goat threat.
Hashtag goat threat. All right. So very exciting stuff, David. 1 week from now, you'll be back to talk about how the winner won. And maybe our complete worldview will be completely turned upside down for this.
That's right. That's right. It could turn out to be a goat threat.
Yes, it could be. Who knows? All right. Fun stuff. We've got another round of the Rob Has a Podcast bloggers here to get you ready for the finale. We have, of course, Michael wrapping up his analysis for the season as he looks ahead to the final six. Christian is looking at the importance of timing. It's everything, David. And of course, Jay's idle play, Hannah's poor decision making, and Adam's failure to act this week. Also, Christine is looking back at Amy's choice to target Eliza instead of Chris back in Vanuatu to explain Hannah's mistake with Sunday. Were you ready for that? For that Vanuatu pull?
No, I wasn't. I pulled Vanuatu also with Dolly.
Yeah, that's true. Then on Tuesday, Christine is taking a look at what the casuals are thinking as we head into the finale and theorizing about why Hannah targeted Sunday. And then this Monday, Sarah Freeman has Jury Jeopardy. And that's going to take place with the RHAP bloggers versus Reality Blurred versus Inside Survivor versus True Dork Times to predict the final three of whom the jury votes for. How about that?
Wow. That sounds like a lot of work. In the Reality News Online days, I used to pull together articles like that, you know, the roundtable articles. That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but Sarah Freeman is up to the task.
She is. Now my question about the bloggers, are any of them going to take up Jeff Probst on his offer? Because he said, if anyone wants to argue with him about whether or not making a big move is a good idea, those bloggers should give him a call and get out there and play. So I think he's casting right now. All those bloggers should get on the phone with him.
Haven't our bloggers given enough to Survivor over the last couple seasons? Do they have to just recruit more and more of our bloggers to the seasons?
Hey, he knows what good TV is.
You're next, David.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that would be so fun, I think, to have you go out there and then have somebody cover why blank lost and then get it completely wrong. And you'll have to go on Twitter and correct the record. Oh, it'll be like, actually, we'll get it right. It'll be great. It'll be so fun.
Yeah, I obviously over the years I've thought about going, but the fact that I am on, thyroid medication, have asthma, and have had a knee surgery make me a little hesitant. You know, I see what has happened medically to some of the survivors, and it makes me a little squeamish.
You'll be fine. They have a fantastic medical staff there. It'll all work out. All right, David, great job. Follow at David Bloomberg to get any takes that he has between now and the finale. And we've got everything you can handle in terms of this Survivor finale coming up. Steven Fishback is going to bring you your know-it-alls. And I'm 99% sure that we are confirmed with the know-it-alls co-host for Wednesday night. But let me just not announce it just in case anything falls through. That's going to be live at 11:15 p.m. Eastern time. I will be at the finale. Very excited to be back there. So I will get to see Sia if she is there in person once again. So excited for that. And then I will be on the red carpet doing my exit interviews with the final six. And then that podcast, the audio of that will be up on robisawebsite.com. And of course in the podcast feed. And then we also have the video of that on our YouTube channel at robisawebsite.com/YouTube. And then David and I will go through everything why blank won.
That's right. That's right.
Plus, I also do feedback with Josh Wiggler the day after the finale. So make sure you get your voicemail questions in as well. robisawebsite.com/voicemail. All right, David. So looking forward to hearing what everybody has to say. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.